Please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and New York Times best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Thank you. Welcome to The Great Misunderstanding. Unleashing the power of generous giving. Open up your workbooks to that lesson, The Great Misunderstanding. This is our bonus lesson, and I've got to tell you, it is a bonus lesson, but I think it may be the most important lesson that we teach. Now, I say that a lot, but this time I actually really mean it. Because if you do the stuff that I teach in the first 12 lessons, if you do them in the order I teach, and you apply enough pressure, enough gazelle intensity to the process, enough passion, enough focus, be proactive enough, you will build wealth. That is without question. It may take some of you a few more years than others, depending on your income, depending on how much life comes along and smacks you, but you will ultimately, over a period of time, build wealth. These principles are that tried, they are that true, you can absolutely count on it. Now, the title of this lesson, The Great Misunderstanding, comes from my second New York Times best-selling book. It was called More Than Enough. And it is still called More Than Enough. It had, what we did is I wrote in it, the things I've studied as I've watched people build wealth, the 10 key character traits of people who win at life and who win at money. And those 10 key character traits were the 10 major chapters in that book. This chapter is the last chapter in that book, and of course it's the last chapter here today. So what has brought us here to get to this point is what we've been learning together called the baby steps. And we've learned 6 baby steps to this point. And a process, if we do anything by increments, anything by degrees, anything a little bit at a time, if you just keep walking, eventually you'll get there. Now let's review those together. Baby step 1 is?
$1,000.
$1,000 in the bank. Baby step 2 is? The debt snowball. So your first thing is you get a little miniature emergency fund of $1,000. Then you work that debt snowball, paying off your debts, everything but the house, smallest to largest. Minimum payments on everything but the little one. Attack the little one with a vengeance and work your way down. Once that is done, then you go to baby step 3, which is?
3 to 6 months
of expenses set aside for a fully funded emergency fund. So we go back to the $1,000 account, raise it up to 3 to 6 months of expenses. Those 3 baby steps, if done with intensity, take the average person going through Financial Peace University, the average person following the Total Money Makeover program, it takes them about 2.5, maybe 3 years maximum. That's the average. Some people do it a lot shorter than that. Some take a little longer depending on their debt load. Then when you reach that baby step, you do baby steps 4, 5, and 6 at the same time. And you're working them at the same time. So we limit the first baby step, which at this point, which is baby step 4. Baby step 4 is 15% of your income going into retirement in good matching 401ks and Roth IRAs. Then once you're doing 15% of your income into retirement, then you start doing baby step 5, which is
college,
that's right. And so once we're doing college, then we're going to go ahead and do baby step 6, pay off the house early. We're going to pay the house off as fast as we can. Now the average is this. The average family that we've been tracking through a couple of decades and several hundred thousand people that have been through this class are hitting baby step 6 and paying off their house in about 6 to 7 years. Some are taking a little longer, some are doing it a little less. But the average is about 6 to 7 years. Now, this particular lesson, because it is the 7th and final baby step, is the exclamation point on the end of this whole series. Because it really takes you where we were trying to get to all along. Let's see what these folks had to say about baby step 7.
The greatest chapter in FPU has to be The Great Misunderstanding. The chapter on giving.
I think it's one of our goals, is to be able to give more.
Yeah.
It's really fun to be able to give anonymously to someone who's in need and that is not expecting it.
Financial Peace has enabled me to impact my community by being able to give back, to give to my church and others, and special contributions, and to share with my family more, things that I couldn't do before Financial Peace.
Giving is really a joy. not just, you know, your tithe to the church, but also things will come up. Friends going into short-term missions or whatever, and you have that money.
This is the first time since we've been married that we have been consistent with our giving, not only to the church, but to local charity. And it feels so good.
Baby step 7, build wealth and give a bunch of it away. Build wealth and give. See, you can do all the things I teach. If you do everything we teach, as I said, you will prosper. But if you don't understand this lesson, you will never really have financial peace. Because I can tell you this, if you eat enough lobster, it tastes like soap. If you drive enough nice cars, eventually you get used to nice cars. If you go on enough cruises, eventually that cruise isn't nice enough. Stuff is just stuff. And eventually stuff begins to wear thin. I've taught you everything about money that I know. All the basics. This is the class you should have been forced to go through before you were let out on the world. We've covered all the subjects. We've gone through everything. But I can tell you this. If you don't get what's in this lesson, if you mess up what's in this lesson, if you do all these other things and miss what's in this lesson, then you will have missed what really matters. Am I saying that everything we taught didn't matter? No, it does matter because it affects your life today. It affects how you retire with dignity or don't, and it affects how you change your family tree. But I'm trying to put in perspective how important the information is in this particular lesson. The great misunderstanding is actually a paradox. It's the mistaken belief that in order to have more, that we have to hold on tightly. It's when we get some money that if we hold on really tight, that's how you get money and keep money. And I got to tell you, I told you in the very first lesson when we were together in Super Savers that this is the international sign of anger, the clenched fist. And an open hand represents an open spirit. And even a dog understands this, remember? And the problem with holding your money in an open hand is some of it might get away. You sit still. Some of it might fall out, but let me tell you what. When you hold money like this, no more can get in. The only way money can get into your hand is with an open hand. And the paradox is that we have this tendency as human beings to be a little bit self-centered and think, if I hold on to my money, I will have more money. I got to tell you, it sounds kind of weird mathematically. But I can promise you there is a result that as you hold your money like this, that you will end up with more. Sometimes some leaves. Sometimes some comes. But if you hold it in this kind of a spirit, it changes the way you handle money. It changes everything about it. Golda Meir used to say that you can't shake hands with a clenched fist. Antoine Rivioli said that sometimes people gain only from their wealth the fear of losing it. Have you ever met someone that the more wealthy they got, the more paranoid and freaked out they got? Because they were holding it so tightly. They had this sense that that was their only security. And that is what's known as a spiritual disease. That causes problems all through your life. You know, anything that's stopped up. Have you ever been out on a farm and you see a pond out there that water runs into but doesn't run out of? And the water becomes stagnant. It just sits there. What begins to grow on top eventually? Scum. That's what people are who don't give. They're scummy, aren't they? You've met them. You can feel it when they're around you. They're scummy. You know, they've tried to go to work for your company. You've tried to go to work for their company. They've tried to date you. You can feel it. You feel that scumminess, don't you? You get this sense of, yuck! And that is because anything that is stopped up, that things flow only into and not out of, eventually begins to stink. And human beings' spirits are exactly the same way. You see, you and I are actually asset managers for the Lord. That's what we really do. We just manage all of our money for him. Let me show you what I'm talking about for a few minutes here. Let me borrow a couple of you. Sir, could I borrow you for just a second? And sir, can I get you? Wait a minute. Let me just get you right here. The two of you. Come on up here right quick for just a second. I promise I'm not going to make fun of you or mess with you or anything else. If I could get you to stand right here and you just stand right here. Just stand side by side and face the audience, please. Okay, what's your name, sir?
Randy.
Randy, it's good to meet you. Your name, sir?
Dan,
good to meet you. I think I've abused you earlier in the lessons. Okay. Now, I'm not going to abuse you or anything, but here's what we're going to do. Randy, this is $1,000. This is my most expensive visual aid. My wife says I can come home, but not without the visual aid. Got it? Okay. I want you to hold that. Okay. Now, y'all watch him. All right. Now, why are they laughing? Okay. Now, Randy is going to represent you and I. And you and I have worked hard, and we've sweat, and we've paid our taxes, and we finally end up with $1,000. Is it hard enough to come up with $1,000? Say yes.
Yes.
I mean, you got $1,000. And your idea is it's a good idea to park your money into a bank. And so Dan is going to be our banker. Randy's gotten his $1,000 together. And so he's going to make the deposit in the bank. I know it's been fun, but make the deposit in Dan's bank. Thank you, sir. Very good. Now, what has just happened, if you were to ask an attorney, there has just been a trust placed in Dan's bank. Randy, or you and I, representing you and I, have placed a trust. Legally, it's called a fiduciary trust relationship now occurs. You are trusting this bank, and a fiduciary trust has been placed into Dan and into his bank by you and I when we made that deposit. Now, if Randy were to go home one afternoon, is this your beautiful wife down here? What's her name?
Michelle.
If you were to go home and Michelle said, Randy, it's time. If you're a good man, you would say, time for what, darling? Because we don't know what you're thinking, women. You know, you think we know. We don't know. You have to say it. Okay? You understand, right? And this particular conversation, she says, it's time to buy a china cabinet. Now, guys, we don't understand. We kind of like to do things and use things, you know? So we don't understand china that you don't use. It just doesn't equate to guys. We don't get it, do we, guys? And we really don't understand like buying a $2,000 cabinet to put the china in that we don't use. This is just not compute. But if you've been married a while, you know you don't have to get it. Sometimes you just got to get it. Right? Isn't that how it works? And so Randy, being a smart man that he is, he says, okay, honey, it's time to get a china cabinet. And so he goes to the bank to get out the $1,000 to go buy the china cabinet. And he goes up and the teller gets this look on her face and says, oh no, you're here. He says, yes, I am. Did I do something wrong? No, but Dan wants to see you in his office. Now, Dan would really never do this. I mean, he's an upstanding guy. He's on the front row. Okay? So he would never really do this. Don't you guys make fun of him later, but this is for pretend because I'm making a point here. So he goes in and Dan says, oh, no, you're here. Sit down. I've got some really bad news. My wife and I, we needed some stuff. Have you ever needed some stuff? Say yes.
Yes.
We needed a new car. We needed some new clothes. We needed to go on a cruise. Our Sea-Doo needed a sister. We needed some stuff. And so I didn't have the money because I don't make a lot of money over here at the bank. And so I just took your money and I bought us some stuff. Is that okay? And Randy, I mean, he's a pleasant gentleman. At first he says, well, no, that's not okay. Besides that, he figures the guys down at work are playing a joke on him or something. This can't be real. But in a few minutes, he starts to realize that this guy's stolen his money. And Dan's like, well, I'll give it back to you when I get out of jail. But I mean, visit with your emotions for just a second. You work hard to get $1,000. You've trusted someone to watch it. And you go into the bank to get the $1,000 out. And they've stolen your money to use it for themselves. Where I come from, I'd be losing my religion in about a minute and a half. I want my money. You know what I'm talking about? Would you be with me on that?
Yeah.
I want my money. I got to tell you, we need to really change the names of this. This is really not a banker, and this doesn't really represent you and I. What this really represents looks more like this. This position represents more like you and I. This position represents God. God owns it all. It's all His. Not 10%, not a love offering. The whole puppy is His. You and I, standing in this position, are asset managers. We're simply managers. And there's a fiduciary trust relationship that when I get who owns what confused here in my life, and I have, and so have you a time or two, because there are no perfect people. And if you're perfect, that was your mistake. When I get confused who owns what, whether I'm a manager or whether I'm an owner, then I make mistakes in my spirit about how to handle God's money and how to handle money in general, because it changes my motivation on how I handle money if I'm a manager versus if I'm the owner. And I have to fight this in my spirit every day because my name is Dave and I like stuff. Hi, Dave. You're my 12-step group, right? And we all struggle with this issue of I own it. No. I have to return in my spirit to the point that I actually don't own it. I simply manage it for another owner. Give these gentlemen a round of applause. Thank you, man. Thanks, guys. So what we've got to start from is the basics. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the Bible says. That's the basic starting point. And you know what? When you can do this, and it's hard to do, it requires some concentration. It's a spiritual, emotional, philosophical exercise to be the manager instead of the owner. Let me tell you something that's interesting. Once you're just the manager, it's easy to give money away. Because it's easy to give away other people's money. If I walk down here and I hand one of you this $1,000 and I say, you know, you're not allowed to keep it, but just for about 2 minutes, and before 2 minutes is up, you got to put one of these to somebody else. You'd be going, okay, how many times can we do this? But if I give it to you, this $1,000, and I tell you to carry it around 3 or 4 weeks, and then you come back in, and by then you've emotionally taken ownership, and I want one of those to give to somebody else, you're going, no, get away from me. This is mine, right? Because I get confused as to whether I'm a manager or an owner. See, the other day, and I'm not bragging or anything, but it makes the point. We've got a whole series of accounting folks on our team, and I went to our controller, and we were doing some charitable giving through the company. An unusual thing. We don't usually do our charitable giving through the company. And I told our controller, I said, I need you to write a check to so-and-so for $10,000. And she wrote that check, and you know, it didn't bother her at all. It was easy for her to give away $10,000 that wasn't hers, wasn't it? It's just numbers on a check to her. And it didn't bother me much, but it bothered me more than it did her. Because I'm not the owner if I've got my head on straight. I'm just the manager. And if I can do that, it's easy to give away other people's money. That's the thing to remember. A steward is a manager, not an owner. Now, in North America, when you hear the word steward, you're probably in church. Steward is an old English term that is not used on the street. If you were to walk down the street and go, oh, are you being a good steward? They'd be going, what are you smoking? But around church, it's code for we're getting ready to build a building. Right? When you hear stewardship broke out, you know something's going on and you grab your wallet, right? Something's about to happen. It's time for the stewardship series, which means we want some of your money. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying you shouldn't learn about money in church, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be giving to your church. As a matter of fact, we're going to cover that extensively here in the next few minutes. But my point is, this word has become an exclusively Christian term, and it's not a Christian word. It's an old English word. Steward, when you look it up in Webster, says one who manages another's financial affairs. Any of you ever see the movie Braveheart? Okay. In the economic times of Braveheart, The castles were there. This was feudal England. And the economic system that was present when William Wallace, Mel Gibson, was doing this movie, when that whole thing was happening, was a very similar time to when the King James Version of the Bible was written. King James Version of the Bible was written in 1611. And so when they did that, they said, you're a steward of this, you're a steward of that, stewardship, 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 all through the King James Version of Scripture. You've seen it in there. Say yes.
Yes.
Okay? And so here's what that meant. There was a castle. The guys in the castle, you remember them? They were the nobles, the landowners. They were the owners of the castle, and they owned a realm. A realm, geographically speaking, would be like about two counties in most cases. So if you took the county you're sitting in, plus another county, or a parish you're sitting in, or another parish, or a district, or something like that, you put a huge area of land together, a couple of those, you've about got a realm. So the lord of the castle owned all this property. And the person who managed all of the crop rotation, the peasant labor, even the slave labor, ran the mercantile affairs, the banking, ran the marketplace, the person who ran all the business of the realm lived in the second nicest home in the realm. A very, very big position. And they were not the owner, they were the manager of all of this stuff, and their title was steward. Makes sense, doesn't it? So when the King James people are translating this, they went, oh, okay, you're not a manager, you're not an owner, or you're not an owner, you're just a manager, just like a steward. And everybody in that time read that and went, oh, I know what that means. I don't own anything. The guy in the castle, the lord of the realm, owns everything. I had a cool experience not long ago. My wife and I were able to travel in Europe some, and one of the trips we got to make was to Edinburgh, Scotland. And in Edinburgh, we were able to find the Ramsay Castle. That was pretty cool. And the Ramsay Castle is now a 5-star hotel, bed and breakfast, with a 5-star restaurant. It was really good in the dungeon. It was really cool. It's Castle Dalhousie, right there in the Edinburgh countryside. And it was very interesting when we were checking in, they saw, of course, Ramsay on the register, and they went, oh, a Ramsay's here. You have to meet Andrew. And so we came down before supper to have a 30-minute tour with Andrew. Andrew has been at Dalhousie Castle for over 35 years as the steward. And there's a picture of me with Andrew. And it was really interesting, and it really put this in perspective for me yet again. Because here's the steward of the castle. And this guy knew every nook and cranny, every bit of history about the thing, and a lot of history about my family. I hope it was my family, because it was really cool. And it was really interesting. And I went, wow, this guy's the steward, just like God calls me to be a steward. He's the manager of the castle. He's not a Ramsay. He works there. He's not the Earl of Dalhousie. He works there. That was very interesting, and it really hit me between the eyes that that's how this stuff works. So when the churches are doing this stuff, and they're going give, 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 and they're doing stewardship, you and I that are sitting in the churches, I've been in leadership, I know we're trying to do good things, but many times we're sitting out there and we kind of just go, oh, enough already. We've put a program in place around our place called Momentum, where we're working with churches not to do fundraising, but instead to get their people in good financial condition, and as they do, the people naturally give. And it's changing the way churches are doing fundraising, because there's no fundraising this way. It's just giving. And it's a very, very cool results. Neat stuff that's happening. See, when you get surplus wealth, when you do the stuff we teach, you have a responsibility to understand this stuff spiritually and philosophically. You've got to grasp it. You've got to think differently. Andrew Carnegie, who was the wealthiest man at the turn of the last century, he was the Bill Gates of that day. Carnegie Hall, the public library system is in place because of Andrew Carnegie. Very, very, very wealthy man. He said, surplus wealth is a sacred trust to be used only for the good of others.